Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Bright Khumalo. Tackling your stock-related questions this evening are independent analyst Jimmy Moyaha and Thamsa Nqaneta from Shiloh Capital. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Gentlemen, it's been an interesting couple of days of trading in the month of August. I mean, you look at the first sort of 2 days where, you know, a reversal of a, you know, a big rally we saw, well, a big relief rally we saw during, you know, the month of July. And obviously now, yesterday, the U.S. market up a lot. And, you know, locally today, the South African market following, you know, on that path. Where did we close, Jimmy? And obviously, I'm going to ask you, how are you finding the earnings season so far? I mean, tech seems to be standing on its own 2 feet.
I think I'm quite happy that tech is standing on its own 2 feet. I'll start with that because tech has been taking quite a hammering of late. It's dipped quite a bit. We've been waiting to see if we'll get a bottom out, if we'll get some form of reversal, some form of reprieve. I mean, we've had the NASDAQ in the U.S. go from 16,000 points to as low as 11,000 points as well at one stage. And so I think the reprieve is very welcome at this stage. On the local front, I know our top 40 sitting above the 62,000 points mark. We're seeing a couple of areas of positivity if we're looking at some of our local miners. Our financial sector stocks are sort of year-to-date, they're all in the green. So financials are still holding steady there, even though guys like APSA were down some 3% today. But I think overall, from a top 40 perspective, from a JSE perspective, we're starting to see that there's still a bit of risk on sentiment and risk on appetite towards us as an emerging market. We're still offering attractive emerging market returns, particularly on the equities front. And I'm liking the fact that from a currency perspective, we're managing to hold below that 17 Rand to the dollar mark following those interest rate announcements, particularly because it's been so tough to sort of get a significant push down on the Rand closer to the 16 Rand or 1550 level, given our other factors that we're looking at. But for now, we take the fact that we're able to hold below 17 Rand and below 1675 as a big positive.
Yeah. Look, we'll take any small wins as South Africans at this point. I mean, traveling can be very expensive when you're South African. Thamsanqa, I mean, your friend at AQR, you know, Cliff Esness, is still, you know, releasing notes saying that the value versus, you know, growth, there's still a big gap to go. And obviously, most of his funds are up about 34% year to date on average. And they seem to be also going up, you know, in tandem with growth stocks that are seeing quite the recovery. So who's losing money this year?
The people on Robin Hood.
So the small man, that's me. That's me and the man on the street.
So I think the retail investors who invest in hype are taking a beating. But in general, if you maintain the strategy of buying quality companies over the long term, you're going to be fine. I think what we're seeing now is that there's a big disconnect between asset prices and asset value. For example, the tech stocks still maintaining value. They're showing their numbers, especially in cloud computing, and how they continue to earn big revenues. But the stock does not necessarily reflect that outcome. And I think it's important to recognize that there can be moments in the market where great companies can have terrible stock prices. The revaluation is going to happen as long as the central bank commits to raising interest rates, or the Fed, rather, commits to interest rates. We've had 2 quarters of negative growth in the U.S., although they are denying that that's the classic definition of a recession. It is. So we're looking at a market where if you understand how to value companies and buy gems, you're going to do very, very well, especially if you pick the right sort of industries and right stocks and right companies, right leadership that can guide you. Outside of that, I think everyone else on the speculative side of the fence is going to lose not one but 2 shirts.
It's an interesting, you know, view of viewing today's market. I guess We did say at the beginning of the year that it's going to be a stock picker's market, and that's what you're still saying. So, and it actually has been a stock picker's market, to say the least. It depends on which stocks you're on or in. You know, that determines your performance. Let's jump into our questions for the day. We have a question on the SMS line here asking the panel's view on Capital & County, so Capco. Do you guys follow Capco at all? Jimmy?
No, not on my side. Haven't followed them for quite some time. Can't really express much of a view on them, unfortunately.
I do have a question. Maybe that'll be even more interesting, because rather than asking about one property company, this one says, hello, team. Ask the panel, is there a way of looking at Satrix Property ETF for the long term, or should I look at other ones? So this is the, you know, the prop 10, the top 10 biggest property companies listed on the JSE, and it's an index. So what's your view basically on REITs in South Africa? Jimmy?
Well, I think if you're going to be looking at the property space, there are some guys that you can look at individually. I think your index is obviously going to give you somewhat of a balanced approach depending on your risk appetite. We know guys like Growthpoint in the property space have reported sort of mixed numbers between their office and their commercial and retail segments. But we know that there's been other REITs that have reported really good growth prospects. I know guys like the Emira Property Fund as well that are holding sort of diversified sectors of property or property assets. So I think if you're looking in the property space, you want to be looking where you're going to be positively impacted by things around foot traffic, things around return to normal. We know that the property space took quite a bit of a hit when we looked at it from a commercial and office perspective, and they're still suffering to or struggling to return with that in some respects. But I think if you're looking at property as a whole and as a sector, and you're looking to sort of get a diversified approach, you would be well suited with sort of that property index that balances that out. But if you're looking for specific gains around specific performances from companies, you might want to zero in on one or two of the key players or one or two of the key property funds.
Yeah, I mean, some of the constituents I see there is like SA Corporate Real Estate, Wheeler Properties, Growthpoint, Investec Property, Redefine, Napier Rock Castle, Resilient, Attack, High Prop, and Fortress, both Fortress A and B. So Samsung, what do you think about, you know, SA Property and the REIT space here in South Africa? Is it investable at all?
I think in certain pockets it is. It's not a case of a broad approach. The quality of the assets and, more importantly, the price that the developers or the developers developed it and the REITs bought it at. I think a lot of the skirmishes we've had around REITs has been around valuation. And a lot of the funds have taken a beating around that. So I think what's important is to understand the assets they hold and the value at which they bought those assets and the projected future usage of those assets, the LTV ratios, and the view of how they look to, as management, repay those long-term liabilities.
And so which, which two would you pick then in that case?
I think Rubosis is doing pretty well. I think that would be rather at the top of my list, and I'm also leaning towards the Investec Property. I think they know how to manage things properly at that part. And Growthpoint would be my third option, but I think my primary would definitely be Rubosis.
So Rubosis is a nice turnaround story, and I like, you know, the balance you're bringing between Rubosis and something stable like a Growthpoint and an Investec. So it sounds good, you know, if you're in portfolio building mode. Any parting words there before we go to the break, Jimmy? Which one would you pick if you had to pick, you know, in these REITs locally? Just give me two names.
Well, I am liking the stability that Samsung mentioned around Growthpoint, but I think I'd sort of go with someone like an Investec as well, just to throw that into the mix. I have in the past sort of leaned towards guys that are similar to your Emira property funds and all of that. But I think for the moment, I'm not against Rebosis at all. I have looked at that in the past, and it did look attractive at one stage. So I'd probably still just add Investec just to that list.
So let's move on from that now. We have a question here from Nelson who says, what's the view of you guys, obviously, on Kumba at this level as a dividend player for the long term? I know, Jimmy, you follow these ones very closely.
Yeah, something Tom Sangwa mentioned earlier around companies sort of having good numbers and the share price not necessarily backing it is something that I've picked up with Kumba. Earnings per share over the last 3 years have averaged at about 25% a year over the last 3 years, yet the share price is only up some 3 to 5 odd percent, relatively speaking. So, sorry?
Disappointing.
Yeah, no, very disappointing. And I mean, you look at Kumba now, they're also now saying that they reported sort of a 50% drop in H1 profits. They're expecting earnings to decline some 5-odd percent every year for the next 3 years. So their earnings forecast is not looking too great. Production was down when they reported, I think about a week ago, they reported production down about 13%. So overall, the concern around companies like Kumba is particularly at a time like this where you're seeing pockets of booms in commodities pricing and pressures on the commodity spaces that mining stocks are able to leverage off of. It's interesting to see that you're not getting as much of a result from them as you'd expect to see in some spaces. We know that in some respects, the iron ore space has been under a bit of pressure. But this is something that you can also see has been translating into Anglo American, which is the parent company. Yeah. This is Anglo American's model and business plan. I mean, they sort of listed Kumba separately, and they've started to do that with a couple of other businesses so that their main share price from movements like this and from performances like this isn't as adversely affected as what it would have been in the past.
Yeah, especially in a group level. Tamsang, do you want to speak about Kumba as well, or do you want to jump in to Zeda rather? Would you say Zeda is a growth stock that you look at?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think at this point, with companies like Zeda, what you're looking at is the ability of management to find great agricultural businesses, bring them into the fold, and translate their profits, their free cash flows, into the earnings of Zeda. Now, we've seen that over time, those type of conglomerates suffer quite a bit, whether it's process as big as they are with their NAV gap. We look at same as PSG looking to delist now for the same reason, and Zeda suffering the same problem. I think at best, I think what they really need to do is look at not being a public traded company and actually become an agri fund that invests in these businesses. And when these businesses do well, bring them to market. I'm not necessarily saying the assets they hold are undervalued or underwater, but I can only get access to those assets through them. And that sort of umbrella makes it hard for me to say I actually hold what I hold and understand what the businesses are, what their cash flows are, what the management is doing, what they're planning over the future. So ideally, I would stay away from these sort of conglomerate type stocks. They don't really offer the kind of value they are working hard to try and deliver.
Yeah, I mean, the shareholders haven't done too badly from receiving those GAP Agri shares, right? And That business is standing on its own as well. I mean, fending for itself on the JSE, which is going to be interesting, you know, not having big shareholders like you used to in the past, like PSG. But anyways, let's move on. Jimmy, do you have anything to add on Zeda before I move on?
Yeah, no, I agree with Tom Tango in that the unbundling of Carp Agri was a good thing for the business. We saw that following the sale of that their logistics group, they did sort of issue a special dividend there. But the concern around the company is rightly around the fact that their business model relies on them being able to have constant acquisitions that are going to result in profitability. And if you look at their portfolio, if their portfolio starts to thin out a little too much, or they're a little light on the assets within the portfolio, it then becomes questionable as to how they're going to then offer those valued returns. Whereas, like with the Carp Agri unbundling, they were able to unlock value for shareholders by eliminating that discount between the two businesses. I think their positioning at the moment is very heavily dependent on the success of what they have in their portfolio, and that could be a bit of a riskier approach, given that we're in times where we're seeing acquisitions and disposals that we haven't seen in a long time.
The JSE has been a very interesting place to be. Definitely also, again, stock pickers market, because there's a lot of activity, you know, M&A and unbundlings and value creation. Everyone is just seeking, to send their share price up, and they're doing something about it, which is good. It's good for shareholders in general. We've got a question here from Sean Case, who says, any insights as to why British American Tobacco has fallen in recent days? Tamsana, you follow
Big Tobacco. It's not a stock we follow, but I would surmise the macro trends towards consumption, disposable income, and operating environment in South Africa and the markets they operate. But outside that, I really don't follow the stock, so I wouldn't know.
Jimmy, BTI?
They announced there was a transaction in their shares recently. I think it was the announcement came through today. I'm also just seeing that they had a couple of other announcements in recent times around some of their numbers, but I can't really attribute any one direct thing to the drop in shareholding. Typically, when you look at a transaction of its own shares or a transaction from its directors, you expect that would result in sort of a reinvestment of confidence or just a strengthening of the view of the company. But in the short term, I'm not seeing anything that's particularly driving them down. I know the tobacco industry was under a bit of pressure from some of the guys that reported on the continent earlier last week as well, but I don't think that would have driven BAT down as much as it has in recent times. Share price is still holding, though, sitting above sort of 30-odd pounds on the London Stock Exchange, so still holding. Could be a good point to enter if you are looking to see it start to push up a bit, but we could still push a bit lower towards that call it sort of a March low that we saw in March of this year.
Yeah, okay. Let's move on to our SMS line. Leo here says, is Old Mutual a good prospect over the next 12 months? Tamsang, Old Mutual?
My argument is no. So
why?
In essence, the two particular reasons. The products they sell largely depend on people's view. So funeral products, life products, insurance products as a whole, and their investment products really rely on how people view the economy and the future. As much as people are committed to ensuring that they make sure their funeral policies and sort of other insurances are up to scratch, there's a whole other set of insurances people will be set to reduce or move to cheaper alternatives as things get a bit tighter. So my view is, as a growth or as a business that you're going to make a decent yield from, not in the short term, not in the next 12 months, but as a stable sort of stock to have in your portfolio that anchors your entire portfolio, then it's a good stock to hold. So if your strategy is looking for growth and continued income, I would say no. It's a very large conglomerate business with a lot of market that they are servicing. So you're unlikely to see their ability to grow versus, say, on the private side, King Price and Hollard, and on the public side, other sort of insurers like Discovery.
Okay, interesting. The insurance space has always been, super competitive, and only guys with scale and size tend to win in the long term, but like in the really long term. We're talking about super long term here. Let's jump into our moment of truth here. I'll start with you, Jimmy. Your stock pick for the evening?
Stock pick. Samsung, I mentioned it earlier. He alluded to it earlier for me. Thanks for that. It's Robin Hood.
it's looking super cheap right now, like super cheap.
And they're doing really well. I mean, that's the thing, right? You've got a share price that's bottomed out at about $6. It's trading at about $10. We saw a 17% rally yesterday, despite the fact that they announced an earnings slump of some 40-something-odd%. Initial price target is up to $13.50. We get beyond that, we can push to $18 to $20. Beyond that, it's basically a free run up to $30 to $40. It's a good tech play for me. You know I've always liked my tech stocks. They've done really well in terms of their announcements around optimizing expenses, cutting down on expenses, optimizing operations to drive profitability. And for the longest time, that's been a concern around getting the company to profitability. I think, of course, we can't ignore the fact that should a recession be triggered, Robinhood users are largely on the younger end of that demographic, and so they might be impacted by a full-on recession. But overall, it's really discounted at the moment. It's got upside potential north of 200 to 300%, and I'm happy with it.
Yeah. I mean, Sam Bankman-Fried, who's, you know, the founder of FTX, is said to be sniffing around there as well. So there could be a transaction on the line. Who knows? And he's been very busy, by the way, buying a whole host of, you know, exchanges, assets, and I don't know. I wonder where he gets all the cash. But anyways, Tom Sang, your pick for evening?
Pambili Natural Resources, the Canadian listed business that has gold assets. They have recently acquired a high quality gold asset in the south of Zimbabwe. Drilling well, and they're manufacturing well, producing well, and beneficiating well. So I think that stock is going to do well over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, this looks like it trades on appointment. I mean, look at that share price. It looks like a barcode. Tamsang, can I trade this thing? So, okay, thank you very much. Thank you very much.
I'm the risk guy.
thanks, Samsung. I mean, it's Pambili, right? You going with Pambili,
yeah.
And to balance that out, you know, Jimmy is going with Robin Hood. Thank you very much, gentlemen. And I always enjoy having the show with you. I always learn new things. With that said, thanks to my guest, independent analyst Jimmy Moya and Samsung Maneta from Shiloh Capital. Do join Zinati for the Friday edition of Stock Watch. That's tomorrow at 19:30. Have a good evening.